Our next item is the operation or the operating budget. You find that material pages 4 through 10. You have had this to consider for some time and had discussions regarding it. And the first thing I'd like is a motion to approve the 08-09 budget in the second, then we'll have discussion or comments.
I so move.
Second.
Okay. At this time, I think we have a presentation coming. Isn't that a beautiful picture? What a landscape. That's WKU.
We truly thought you would enjoy the picture if, I'm not sure that'll make up for the budget. because there's many that aren't pleased with this budget. Couldn't decide if I would be labeled the drama queen if I quoted Thomas Paine and said these are times that try men's soul. So I thought maybe I'd try Charles Dickens and say Tale of Two Cities. It was the best of times, it was the worst of times. But either way, the budget moves us forward strategically, but at a slower pace. And obviously there are some good news in the budget, but items such as faculty and staff compensation couldn't be addressed in this budget. One thing I'll point out for, we may have the same regions as a year ago. I'm not sure about Mr. Johnson when you came on the board. Last time you had what was called the salary compensation book. Just to point out that what we have changed is that we're not preparing that book. That book was a supplemental document to the budget and reflected salaries basically as of January, where we took a snapshot of people and positions. And after some discussion, concluded that it wasn't the best way for you to do your statutory responsibility of approving salary increases. So salary increases will, in fact, be brought to you at the July meeting with personnel actions as you normally approve. However, we have committed to make a change via technology and provide the salary book available as a PDF file on the website when we do post the budget. So let me just point that out. Dynamics of this budget. Obviously, it's a biennial budget, an austere budget for higher education. It's sometimes hard to say we're pleased about anything in the budget, but we know that it could have been a whole lot worse, given that we started with an executive budget presented by the governor that would have reduced education, post-secondary education, significantly more than our 6% reduction. So the positive side is, again, the General Assembly's commitment to post-secondary education reform. This budget does reflect the 6% state budget reduction, which was, that's one reason it made such a challenging budget for the budget staff, both of them, it being their first budget. Having to reduce a budget before you, in fact, built a budget is never an easy process. Tuition is our primary revenue source. Obviously, with 6% less in state funding, we're highly dependent on tuition in order to address our strategic initiatives. And as you heard in a previous occasion, with the CPE having reduced our increase to resident undergraduate students in the name of affordability, it posed another challenge in trying to balance this budget with the tuition revenue we had or we project to have. Strategic initiatives. We have selected initiatives. We will continue to move forward. Those are important to us. And the last component of this budget is obviously the capital budget. Although we didn't have legislative relief from state funding to address a significant backlog of capital needs for an aging campus, we continue to move forward and will move forward. Highlights of the biennial budget, the state appropriation reduction in the first year, $5 million. Good news for the second year is that 1% of that budget reduction is restored in the second year of the biennium. We have transfers from the CPE. It makes it appear as if we have an increase in funding. It's money that has been coming to us from the CPE for engineering and regional stewardship. However, we previously recognized it as restricted funds, not state appropriation. And lastly, the state does fund as a legal obligation any changes in state-supported bonds.
And the transfers, does that now go into our base funding?
Yes, it does.
So that
effective
will
not be, July 1.
That will not be forthcoming in the future because it is now into our base.
That's correct. Changes in state appropriation. Isn't it hard to build a strategic plan when you don't have a reliable stream of state appropriation? 3 out of the 6 years are reductions. And I feel like I have short-term memory because I don't remember 06 being a good year, but apparently it was. So I had to go back and look at the budget and say, well, wait a minute, what did we do in 06? Because apparently we had a good budget and I seem to have forgotten it. But in 06, in a good year, we managed to have a 4% salary pool. Still a little short of what we think our employees deserve. Part of the increase in 06 is I thought you'd be kind of curious about a good budget. We had M&O for new facilities. A significant amount of money came from the state because we were opening new buildings. We also were given restoration of half the budget cut that you see. We took a budget cut in 04-05. So part of that increase is the fact that they restored some of the budget cut. But again, it makes it tough in terms of our strategic planning and our financial planning when we don't seem to have an average state appropriation that's sufficient. In terms of state support per FTE student, if you look at the beginning of post-secondary education reform, we were funded from the state at $4,483 per student. Looks good, going to other than the fact that we're down 2.4% in real numbers from the 08 budget to the 09 budget. However, let's take the 4,483 and adjust it to real dollars and adjust it for inflation. What that tells you between fiscal year 99 and 2009, in real purchasing power support from the state, we're projecting will be over that time period 16% less. So not only are we having some difficult times in terms of the state's economy and how they can support us, you know, and you pay the bills too, our purchasing power erodes, and that projects based on 2008 that our purchasing power in terms of state support per student will actually be down 16%. Operating budget, $329,557,000, not that big. $329.6 million will work for me. Our budget's up 4.7%. A significant increase, which I'll get into in a second, would be the increase in the tuition, increase in restricted funds for student financial aid. Distribution of the budget. 42% of our budget comes from tuition and fees. You have $61 million, 20% coming from restricted funds. Restricted funds are your grants and contracts and your federal and state-funded student financial aid. Out of the total operating budget, the state appropriation accounts for 27%. We generate some of our other money, self-generated money, including auxiliaries. Down at the bottom tells you educational in general is almost $310 million, while your auxiliary operations, primarily driven by reimbursed costs from the Student Life Foundation for our housing program, but the bookstore's in there, will have a budget of approximately $20 million. I wanted to go to the handout next because some things don't lend themselves to the PowerPoint, too many numbers, but I think it's helpful to have take a second and say, well, what makes, when you look at that estimated revenue, restricted funds, and other funds, what is in this budget? What drives this budget? So if you can just look at the handout for a minute. Again, we've got a budget of over $329 million. Working down the list, restricted funds, those are the ones we normally talk about. We don't spend them unless we receive them, externally restricted normally. So you have grants and contracts in this budget of over $24 million. You have student financial aid of only over $37 million. In the category of what do we generate ourselves, including our carry forward from the previous fiscal year, it's projected to be a little over $34 million. Auxiliaries, again, $19.9 million. State-supported debt, can't use it for anything else, $1.7 million. The academy, program that's distinctly funded, $2.7 million. We get to a category we call public funds, our basic funding for day-to-day operations. Public funds, what do the students pay out of tuition and fees? What does the state put in for operations? Everybody with me? Okay. State appropriations for operating, $77.9 million. Contrary to the 27% for state appropriations, when you back out the academy and you back out the debt service, the state's now down to about 24% of funding our needs versus tuition and fees at 40%. So we've heard people say that we used to be state-supported and now the phrase is state-assisted. And that number, year after year, shows our reliance for generating our own revenue and assessing tuition charges in order to fund our basic operations. Revenue allocations for strategic allocations. I believe you had this in your agenda item. They're listed in the executive summary of the bound book. We had estimated tuition increase based on fall and spring revenue of slightly over $4.8 million. In order to balance the budget, and this occurred, some of this occurred anyway after the change in the tuition rates made by the CPE, but in order to balance the budget, we made a decision to change how we funded the workers' compensation program, reallocate that budget, because currently we are overfunding our self-insurance workers' comp program fairly significantly. We have the capacity also in the next line to move the workers' comp manager position to be funded out of the workers' comp budget. We, again, were looking for funds to balance the budget, and an agreement was made with Academic Affairs for them to forego $45,000 of indirect costs on grants and contracts that would have gone to Academic Affairs primarily for incentive funding, but for the need to not have to cut anywhere else in the budget, they graciously agreed to allow $45,000 to come to balance the budget. The same situation applies in the DLO online learning tuition. While $100,000 usually comes to central allocations on a one-time basis, the agreement was just to recognize that the online learning component of this university keeps growing by leaps and bounds, and the agreement was made that $100,000 could help balance this budget. So the $8,845,000 is the number you would have seen in the handouts when you first time approved tuition increases. So our strategic allocations have remained unchanged since the spring meeting. However, how we were going to fund them had to change. Strategic allocations, $2.2 million for unavoidable cost increases. A category we call strategic initiatives, of which I sometimes think some of them are unavoidable costs, especially as it relates to rate increases on scholarships. But it gets a little muddy sometimes when you try to put things in a category. But we have strategic initiatives, $8,044,500. The last category is called other campus policies, which has to do with restricted tuition. Our decision to allocate tuition increases to student technology, health service, and SGA. That only accounts for 2% of our allocations. The same list is included in your agenda item. Minimum wage increase. This budget proposes to fund half of the minimum wage increase centrally and allow divisions to make a decision on student employment, number of hours, in order to determine their capacity to fund the other half of the minimum wage increase. Increases for KERS, utilities, the employee educational benefits, good news, bad news. Good news is that more of our employees are, in fact, pursuing post-secondary education opportunities. However, it does cost us more because of the higher participation. We have to record it as an expense, and it does reflect the tuition increase effective this fall. And then you have a variety of other cost increases. The last is our policy implementation for faculty promotions and tenure for $357,000. Strategic initiatives. This is the list that you've seen before. Essentially, Again, we have scholarships. Graduate assistantships, it's not new assistantships. It allows us to keep the value of existing assistantships by giving them an increase to offset their tuition increase. Growing cost pressures on library subscriptions and periodicals. Our commitment to better serve and offer more programs at extended campuses, Eaton, Fort Knox, Radcliffe, Owensboro. Going live, bringing up, I guess this fall, Barbara, the Educational Leadership Doctoral Program, additional funding for the program. Continued strategic commitment for honors, study abroad. The faculty salary and compression shows $284,000. That's actually $300,000 on a recurring basis. The increase goes into effect August 1. That does include salary and the associated benefits that increase due to the salary. A modest commitment to meet our capital campaign. And lastly, what you've heard, our commitment for $500 raise per full-time employee. This is a base increase, and as you'll see in, I think, the next slide or two, not all institutions have made a commitment to increase base salaries. Last category, parking and transportation. This is the seventh year of 10 years that we made a commitment that parking and transportation revenue collected will, in fact, go back directly to support that program. Lastly, restricted tuition programs that I named. Unrestricted E&G, part of our budget, almost 60% people, personnel costs, benefit costs. We have operating expenses of the numbers are on, percentages are on there, but to tell you how much we're spending, this is the unrestricted E&G budget because it's 75% of the budget and is where we have flexibility compared to the restricted funds. So in personnel, we're actually anticipating to spend over $151 million. Operating is about $89 million. $10 million in utilities, a very sensitive area. After we built this budget, we found out we have a coal increase, coal price increase. You know, some of us have been labeled doom, gloom, and despair. Well, DFM, Facilities Management Department, has said soon, and you're going to hear that natural gas is going up. Why not? Electric and coal have gone up. It's just a matter of when.
That means I've got to add John Osmer to that list, too.
Well, we weren't going to tell him about agony on me, were we? So we try to keep our humor, sense of humor, even during difficult times. But $10 million for utility costs, obviously, we're very sensitive to rate increases. And Mr. Osborne and his staff are doing everything possible to do what we call performance contracting, to find ways that you can invest money to save money in terms of bringing down our utilities costs. So we spend approximately $6 million on equipment and $58 million on student aid, with the balance being $14.6 million on debt service. Back to salaries. I said 60% of our budget has to do with people. Now, it's not all full-time people. It includes part-time people. It includes graduate assistants, student wages, and our benefits. But it's obviously a very important part of our budget. But just so that we can put our $500 raise in perspective, I thought it would be helpful for you to see what other institutions chose to do in regard to salary increases. You'll see KSU, KCTCS, and UK choosing to have no salary increase effective July 1. You'll see Murray State choosing to have a lump sum increase. You can see how austere this budget is for all institutions to be able to make any allocation to salaries.
And is that lump sum not applied to the base? It's just
it is
it's
not.
Like
they'll
a bonus
get it for 1 year, and then the following July they'll go back to the previous salary.
So there's okay, no residual for that.
So it's obviously a difficult budget for all of higher education. Last item is a few highlights from the capital budget that you have heard about already because of the biennial budget presentations that Robin Taylor has presented to you. But essentially, there's three aspects to the capital budget. One is the General Assembly's authorization for projects. But you have to keep in mind when they have in the capital budget, you'll see projects that are authorized from our own funds. That is authorization pending whether we have the available funds on a lot of projects. So we would rather have authorization and should they be able to be addressed. But there are a significant number of what we call restricted funds, and in their terminology, that just means our self-generated money, that chances are those projects will have to be deferred. But what is on the list approved by the General Assembly in the kind of the second category is agency bonds, ability to issue these projects, many of which you've seen before, many of which were victim of a veto in a previous session. However, we're pleased to be able to have authorization to move forward on these. I'm showing you the anticipated bonds and the total budget. Total budget would just indicate money that we have accumulated in cash for these projects, anticipating we would be able to issue them, and we'll be able to use those funds to supplement the bond funds.
And
the last item.
The numbers in the right-hand column were captured from the time that the board approved the debt service to these agency bond projects, and those fiscal year budgets actually began, took place. That's the money that was captured for debt service for these projects while the projects were in limbo following the veto in 2006. You had the debt service, but you couldn't authorize, you couldn't issue the bonds because you weren't authorized to do so because they were vetoed. So you capture the debt service for those projects. That money's dedicated to the projects. Therefore, that's helping cover the increased cost of a project. That's the same project now that it was then, but it's going to cost more now. That helps cover that cost. Plus, in some cases, some money was spent on design services, some HVAC systems in the case of Ivan Wilson Center, other initiatives. So that cash was well used between the time it was vetoed, approved by the board, and then vetoed, and now. That's the difference in those two columns.
Two more points on that. On some of these projects, we're authorized to issue bonds at a higher amount. We will not need to do that because we have accumulated cash balances. So what you'll see in the capital budget is the legislative authorization. And when we come back with approval to issue bonds, you'll see, again, consistent with this, that our authorization, we're not going to use all of our agency bond authorization because we do have the cash accumulated. The other clarification would be Science and Technology Hall. That $3 million is a function of an existing state project where we continue to do the science complex, and we will, in fact, be able to proceed, but just weren't able to fully fund Science and Technology Hall with the $3 million, obviously, that we have in an existing project. The last item on that list is the state matching for deferred maintenance. Another indicator of we know that we have a deferred maintenance problem, a capital renewal problem. However, $1 million for a university our size for the next 2 years is so woefully inadequate. But we will take the million and allocate that and match it as required by the CPE in order to secure these funds. Happy New Year. So, you know, it's a few days early for 4th of July, but it is a new year and a new beginning for us. And let me again, as you have done, thank Kim Reed, our budget manager, and Stacy Garrett, budget analyst, for doing a superb job on this budget.
Great. Great job.
Thank you.
Questions? Some questions about the bound.
Okay.
What's in the bound? On page
Kim!
No, I just had some. On page 23, it talks about Provost. VP Academic Affairs CF, which is carry forward, and the amount is $10 million. I thought a carry forward is just kind of like what's left over from the year before, and you'd carry it forward to the next year.
It is.
Why is that? I mean, $10 million, that's a lot. Isn't that?
It seems like
a lot. We're here to be more specific. It's not just money left over. Some of it is money that's in grants multiple years. Some of it's money that we don't get till the year end. And can't spend it at the time. Some of it's obligated, belongs to specific accounts like distinguished professor accounts. Some of it's designated for particular projects for which only that money goes. But not an awful lot of it is just sitting there left.
Right. Okay, it just seemed like that.
How much of that is in revenue-dependent accounts? And I'll describe what that is.
Was Diva still in there this year? Okay. I think probably four or five million of it was in Diva.
Programs that are generated.
In a revenue-generating account.
Well, what revenue-generating accounts mean? They're accounts that stand on their own financial substance. They perform services. They generate revenue, and they're responsible for operating within that revenue and are encouraged to store, save, keep some back because they have no source of bailout if they have a financial shortfall.
Some of that may not have been moved out of there yet, for the building.
I agree. That is a lot of money, and we talk about that often internally.
Yeah.
Because particularly when you're dealing with a tough budget situation as we were, it's hard for, and I've made this example in many other correlations, it's hard for campus to understand why you can be doing this while we're cutting that. And it's also hard for campus to understand how you can have this kind of cared for money while we're making cuts on the other hand. Mm-hmm. But again, kind of like gifts that come through, most of it is restricted for specific things. And with the way we budget and have been for the last 9 years, I guess, is that we allow units to keep their carry forward as an incentive to generate it. And to not overspend. If you underspend, you get to keep what you didn't spend as an incentive to be otherwise. But the budgeting system that I inherited in 1997 was spend it or lose it, which is usually not a good thing because you get a lot of money spent in the last 3 weeks of the fiscal year, and there's just not an incentive to be efficient. But I agree with you. It is a lot of money. We track it. Sometimes we get a little nervous that there is that much. In any division, let alone one division, but it is the largest division. As you can see, I think $159 million of the $330 million budget is in academic affairs. So in that context, that provides some explanation.
Okay. And if you need more on the revenue dependent, if you want to mark down, page 32 is the starting of the listing of exactly which programs we operate in that manner.
Okay. I have another question. On page 35, it says the $7 million allocated to the bookstore. Is it not self-supporting? Is it?
Yes. John, bookstore, yes. Self-supporting?
Anything on this page, auxiliaries, this entire budget is supported by the revenue that they generate.
Okay, so that's just what they generate. That's not an actual budget item. I mean, that's not budgeted from the general resources. That's what they make.
No. Okay. No, this is a summary of auxiliary programs, and they generate all of their own revenue.
Oh, okay. And I have
that's a great point. Sometimes I know a board gets a book like this, and they see lots of different kinds of money, and there are half a dozen revenue sources that put this budget together: tuition, state appropriations, auxiliary revenues, federal support, so forth, so on, grants and contracts. The auxiliaries, those are our business enterprises. And what I'm proud of is you don't see a deficit in any of those auxiliary enterprises. They all operate in a for-profit manner, in a prudent manner with good business acumen, and they all generate revenue, much of which goes toward things like when it comes time to renovate the Downing University Center, which phase three is going to be a $40-some million project, but we've got to work between now and the next couple of years to capture auxiliary revenue to the point where we can cover that debt service because it's an auxiliary building and can only be renovated with auxiliary dollars. So this is the business practice of the university, and we do a terrific job of running these businesses in a business-like manner. Now, in theory, we're not supposed to be highly profitable, but in reality, they better be operating in the black. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you got the bookstore bailing out printing services or vice versa, and that's not a good thing either.
Okay.
May I follow up on that? So I did have a question about the bookstore since it is making a profit. So you're capturing that profit to use for the Downing Center renovation. Where exactly is that going?
Yes, there are what I almost call indirect costs for the bookstore. They operate in DUC, so it is reasonable that that some of their profit go to making infrastructure repairs.
Sure.
We do reinvest back in the bookstore to allow them some growth in how they serve their customers.
Now that's not the profit margin of the bookstore, that number you see there, the $7 million. That's the budget for the bookstore.
That $7 million is the budget for the bookstore, and a large majority of that budget is cost of inventories. So those textbooks that are purchased, we're only passing 20% margin, estimated margin, on to the students, so a large majority of the sales of the bookstore go cover the cost of the inventory.
On page 22, you have the revenue for the bookstore is projected to have a net margin of approximately 10%.
Right, and that's exactly what I was asking about, that 10%.
Yeah, there you go.
$8.4 million is the projected revenues, and 10% is approximately the return on that. So the auxiliary division itself will net about $800,000 from that will be used within the auxiliary services division for recapitalization and reinvestment into the program somewhere. In other words, it doesn't necessarily all go back to the bookstore, but rather it would go somewhere within auxiliary services.
And the largest...
It might even be in dining services.
Well, but the largest share of that will be to renovate the dining center to the extent possible. And that hadn't been determined yet, but this will be a major source of revenue to provide debt service to renovate the dining center.
We have sizable debt on DUC for the last 35 years that has also had to be retired as a result of with the surpluses coming from all of auxiliaries.
And it's retired in 2008.
2009.
Make the last payment
one more year.
On housing and dining bonds.
And then we turn our attention to renovating it, which probably cost 10 times what the building cost to build in the first place.
You are a new one.
It's a vicious cycle.
One more question. On page 37, under Potter College of Arts and Letters, you have PD Potter College, which I understand is professional development, AA Potter College of Arts and Letters, which I understand is action agenda, then you have AA/PD. So why is it that divided between the two previous lines?
We allow some discretion within the division to budget their funds that help them manage them appropriately. So the decisions made within academic affairs, why that budget happens to be, I presume, a combination of action agenda and professional development.
But so you couldn't allow all that on one line. It's all the same. Is that what you're saying? Those three lines are all the same, basically.
Just to clarify, the funds that are in the AAPD index are divided by the CTE, and we have to account for them separately because we have to report to the CTE.
Okay.
The funds that are in the PD index are professional development funds found within Potter that they have set aside on our own.
Oh, okay.
So because of the reporting requirements of the CTE, we have to keep those separate.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
I learned something.
On page 32, on the staff benefits undistributed.
Just a minute, please. Let me get back to
okay.
We are in which? Okay, which category?
On page 32, expenditure summary.
Okay, I'm with you.
So, I think I have a little bit of an idea of where those go to, but where do those $2 million in funds go to?
In what category?
Staff benefits undistributed.
Staff benefits undistributed. I'm drawing a blank. Kim, can you help me? We pay the faculty staff scholarships and the dependent child scholarships out of it. That would be a significant component of that.
Tamla, help me. I'm sorry. Did you say page 32?
Page 32.
She's looking at university-wide, a line called staff benefits undistributed.
Gotcha. Okay.
I can get you the detail on it, but I know that a majority of it has to do with our benefits program to provide scholarships.
Do you know if all of that's spent each year, or if there's...
Yes, this is what we're spending for our employees here. If you look under the category, almost, what's it, right above it, scholarships mandated,
mm-hmm.
That one does include other university and community college employees that choose to get their education here through the House bill, the Post-Secondary Education Reform Act. And both of those programs, one where other employees can come here and our employees that pursue their education here, it's remarkable that you can never seem to budget enough. And that's good news, again, that people are pursuing an education. But it's been a program where I keep trying to project based on the tuition increase and the previous year's utilization. So if you compare from year to year, you'll see some sizable increases for those.
And you might clarify what that is that employees from any public university can attend any other public university for up to six hours
a semester
at no cost to that employee. So that's part of the House bill. That's part of the statute.
And that would extend that said at any of our extended campuses. So not just the main campus. Any other questions?
No, please go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I don't have any other questions, but I did have a comment on the budget. I was looking back through here on some of the mandated increases, unavoidable costs and expenditures, the salary increases for the staff, the market adjustments for the faculty. Within the budget, there's also a faculty replacement pool for computers. Therefore, when I look at the budget from the staff viewpoint and the people that I'm elected to represent, there is a glaring absence of staff issues. I know back in last summer when we did the survey of where the faculty were on the benchmarks, and there was a percentage when they did the staff where we were on benchmarks or anything, it was blank. There wasn't even any funding or any checks done on where we stand on that. We know we're understaffed seriously. We know that... it's even worse now than it was. We know that there are staff taking on additional workloads because people in their departments have been let go. And, even to get a computer replacement pool for the staff, I mean, we're the ones doing payroll with older computers. We're the ones doing budget. We're the ones doing HR, retirement benefits. We can't even get the faculty have almost $300,000 to replace older equipment. But there's nothing for the staff. We've been trying for years to get that, and no one will fund that. But so I just want to explain when the budget comes up, I will be voting no on it because there's nothing in there that addresses the staff issues at all. And there doesn't appear to be any kind of focus or even attention being given to that area. I do think the president's tried to do a very good job in a very difficult situation, and I do applaud the $500 raise because that does benefit the staff. But that's probably the only item in there. And I just thought, we need to look at the staff issues because we keep doing more and more with fewer and fewer people and no, cost adjustments for that. And we just can't keep doing that. Thank you.
One thing that I can't be entirely specific because I've not finished the process, but I hope to finish it this evening, is... the net number as we start the July 1 year of salary increases above $500 and new positions and reclassifications and so forth. One of the things, frankly, that I'm troubled with, and it's taken me a week or two to try to get a handle on it, is there is a... surprisingly large number of staff increases, both in new positions and salaries, that I'm having a hard time working through. And I have some concerns about some of the funding sources for some of those, but it's hundreds, far more than faculty.
So there's staff increases in...
salary increases above $500 and new positions. Most of it paid for out of departmental funds, or other fund sources, and that's what I'm trying to get a handle on, what are some of the other fund sources, some of which I need to discuss with the vice president over that division. Suffice to say that from a faculty standpoint, it's a net reduction of positions, and from a staff standpoint, it's a net increase significantly. So the needs are being, maybe not all the needs are being met, but the needs are being met to the extent possible. Again, not always with central funding, a lot of it with departmental funding, but the reality is every new position, every increase comes back centrally the following year when salary increases are approved out of the central funding source and for one more year tuition revenue. You're right, but it's a little bit more complex picture than that, and the information that I've got on my desk right now, there's actually more than meets the eye that's being done with from a staff, from an executive administration is down, faculty is down, staff, skilled positions, support staff, office associates. What's the other category, Ann, in that mix are all up. So,
And
frankly, I'm not going to approve them all. I can't approve them all. That's going to be a difficult process and I got to finish wading my way through it this evening.
Because I know that departments, you know, as you said, have had to take on funding the new positions because they have to have it as the workload's increased. And, right. You know, as we've grown, the workload's gone up, the numbers have gone up, and I'm hearing from the staff, from, you know, departments that can't fund their own, so they're just lost, or they're working, they're the ones who are here working till 6 and 7 at night, and they're the ones who are here working on the weekends, you know, that I talk to and hear from, and so, you know, there may be increases, you know, but we need those increases wherever we can get them, and I would hope that you, you know, really consider it because we really need the staff positions.
I'm not going to decline any support staff positions. It's some of the administrative positions that I'm probably most concerned about.
I appreciate your comment about computer replacement. It was a priority in my division for several years as we are able to reallocate any funds. We had fully funded our division's computer replacement. However, it was limited because we are so heavy into personnel, that was our budget cut. You know, where are you going to cut? We did cut a position. That was back. We did eliminate my division's computer replacement fund. So it's an unfortunate. We had made progress and lost it. Any more questions?
Yes. Yeah. Just sort of continue on those themes. I mean, you know, thank you, President Ransdell, for, you know, acknowledging that the faculty have lost positions, and I am happy to vote for a budget that includes this $500 raise, although I have gotten more flack about that from my faculty than anything else in this budget. And they're not wrong, particularly senior faculty being harmed by it, but I can't vote for something that would be unfair. A 1% raise would have been grossly unfair to our staff. I can't support anything that would have been grossly unfair to our staff, even if it does not give more senior faculty the compensation they think they deserve. But
that they do deserve.
Yeah, they absolutely deserve it. And you know, I'm taking the hit for the team this time, but we have seriously got to look at our priorities, and we have to start putting money back into academics. I want to talk about tax to DLO here in just a second, but our student faculty-student ratio is going unacceptably high. I think we all know we can't get where we want to be as a leading university with those kind of faculty-student ratios that are opening up, and we won't have the same experience. If we don't have the same experience, students go elsewhere. We are so tightly budgeted, plus or minus 100 students makes a huge difference. So, you know, people come here for an outstanding experience, and we have to make sure that we have the resources to provide that experience, or they'll go elsewhere and our budget woes continue. My bookstore point was sort of to illustrate the point I'm getting ready to make about DLO. Academic affairs and DLO have basically been taxed $100,000 to help take care of the extra 1% we had to cut. And, you know, while I think that's the right thing to do, I want to know, when do we get that money back? Distance and, you know, the distance and extended learning and outreach, it's a revenue producer. It's our bookstore. It is the opportunity for us to produce a fair amount of revenue that we can put back into academics and do things that we might not otherwise be able to do through the budgeting process. So when do we get that back?
Barbara, you're going to have to fill in some details on that. We do have
actually
a pretty sophisticated funding distribution of dealer revenues, but Barbara...
Yeah. Actually, Patty, I probably would have shouted a little louder if it had been a real cut.
I'm sure of that.
It is a real cut, but actually there's a percentage of the dealer distribution that goes back to university. And what basically President Ann asked us to do was to take part of that discretionary, and it said $100,000. It's actually $200,000 that goes back and out of each million, or 20%.
Yeah.
And so
one-time versus permanent.
What that was a commitment to make part of it recurring. So the university is still taking the same distribution, which I think is a pretty fair one, but has chosen to reduce university flexibility in how to use that money by putting $100,000 of it into the base budget, and let the remaining 10% be flexible.
Which is one-time money.
Which is the other
But the
money,
distribution so. To academics to this date, I believe, has been in one-time
allocation.
It doesn't
allocation. Change the... Bottom line is it did not change the distribution pattern. It's just that the university president and made the decision to reduce their flexibility in how to use it by committing $100,000 of it to the base budget, which we're okay.
Well, and there was... $100,000 of that distribution to come in the president's office that was given up to meet the last budget cut because of the tuition change differential. So we all shared.
Well, and we all have to share in difficult times, but if the bookstore or athletics or other revenue producing units can plow their profits back into their own units and do things they need to do. We all have things that we need to do, and I just want to make sure that's out there.
Most of the DLO revenue stays with DLO, and most stays in academic affairs. And some will be dedicated to some debt service as they renovate the South Campus, the rest of the further end of the South Campus, and expand
that.
Their capacity. So
cash is good.
They'll have cash to pay for their own conference center expansion.
Right. Question on page 14 under university funds. It's the field replacement at Houchins L.T. Smith Stadium. Why did I think... I was a little surprised to see that there. Does it have to go out? Why do I think a game guarantee was going to take care of this? Didn't Dr. Seelig tell us that?
This is the expenditure authorization by the General Assembly.
Right.
The revenue source is the game guarantee that's up in the operating budget.
Okay, so that's going to offset it.
This is simply a list of what the legislature has authorized us to do.
To use our own funds for.
Right.
You're correct. That is the source.
Okay. Secondly, page 31. Men's soccer is $174,000. Will it take 3 full years to get that down to zero?
I'm not sure if there's anyone here from athletics
to tell you
the update on how many students chose to stay.
Right.
But at this point, we left the grants and aid budget
at the maximum,
allowing the time for all decisions to be made. I'm not sure there's anything else in that budget but the grants and aid.
Okay. Right. Is that your understanding that within 3 years it goes, it's declining amount, and in 3 years it's at zero? Is that the right time frame?
Well, no, I don't know that that's the case, because they've met their budget cut, and they will likely, once those scholarships have exhausted for the young men currently earning those scholarships are probably the redirected to other programs.
Right.
That are
the budget item becomes zero, though.
Yes.
The scholarship budget.
The budget item would.
Soccer budget disappears when we have better.
Right. And it will slowly but surely be reallocated into other things in that division.
Correct.
Right. Okay. Just wanted to make sure.
Other questions? Hearing none, let's have a vote. All in favor of the accepting the 08-09 budget, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Same sign?
Aye.
Thank you. So noted. Thank you again for the work on this. It's not pleasant to raise tuition. It's not pleasant to make cuts. I think your pieces of literature at the beginning were well stated, and we will hope for a better day.
Well, again, I want to compliment everybody that's worked on this budget. It was a short time frame from the legislative session through the CPE process with tuition. There were, you know, starts and restarts, and by the time you determined all your reductions and factored those in, and it's really been a challenge in a very short window this particular spring to get this done. So it's a terrific job, everybody involved.